This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Bill Gormley. Bill is the president of WNG. And the chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And Bill, I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Roger. Yeah, everybody had a good day of getting together and some good food, so I appreciate it. And hope you and your family did as well. You were in Ohio, right?
Yeah, we were at the in-laws, and we had a great time, 14 people there, and my family was happy because the Green Bay Packers won, so that made the day. So
congratulations.
Thanks, Bill. Well, it's not the Washington Redskins, but hey, what can you do? So, Bill, I do know mergers and acquisitions, they happen all the time. Can you tell us a little bit about what you've been up to over the last 6 months?
Sure. I was with the Washington Management Group. And I was president of that, and also Fed Sources. And we were acquired by Deltek earlier this year in April. And the transition was complete. And so I stayed through the transition. And so I ended my employment there with Deltek in October. And kind of on my own now and seeing the other side here. But started WNG, which happens to be my initials. So anyway, LLC. So kind of just talking to a lot of folks and seeing where that takes me. And but I enjoy this part of the industry, that the commercial side of dealing with the federal government.
As well, just since you've had a little time to reflect on where you've been and what you've done, can you talk a little bit about, one role you've had for quite a while is the chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Can you talk a little bit about your role there?
Yeah, the coalition is a quick backdrop for the listeners. It's been around over, I think it's about 30 years now, and it was really put together by a former commissioner at the GSA Federal Supply Service, Mike Timbers. And he, industry, saw the value and the need for a voice from a government contractor standpoint to interface with the government agencies and have put common sense in government procurement. And that was kind of the foundation of the coalition. When I was in government, I was asked to speak periodically at coalition events about the things that we were doing at the time when I was at the GSA in contracting policy and the programs, and in particular the GSA schedules program. So that's how I came in contact with the coalition. I was always very respectful of their position, understanding that while there's not an expectation to have 100% agreement, but we would always have a good discussion with contractors coming in a unified position of what they thought would be appropriate from a government's requirements and contracts and policies, and we would talk through those. And from that, I gained a lot of respect for them, and in some cases we made changes, and in some cases we didn't.
Well, and for sake of full disclosure, yeah. I actually work for the Coalition for Government Procurement as well. I'm the president, and so sure. So I do understand the value proposition there. The coalition actually just had our fall conference back at the end of October, and you had an opportunity to engage in a dialogue on a couple key issues, and I just wondered what your thoughts about how the conference went and those discussions, one of them in particular, strategic sourcing, and also just where the Federal Acquisition Service was heading.
Yeah. Congratulations to you and your team for putting on a good conference too, Roger. They're always just tricky. You never know until you...
Absolutely.
until afterwards. But anyway, great job. I think in the area, I think the one of the key changes in this year's conference that you held was actually having panels of folks, not basically, and this is not a criticism of showing PowerPoints all day and people listening and pretty much the speakers delivering a message and the in this case the members of the coalition receiving that message, but actually having a dialogue. I think that was a good change up on the coalition's part, and I actually think the folks that we're talking to on these panels actually feel an opportunity of being able to convey a message that's much clearer. So I know there's reasons for PowerPoints. I've used them a lot of times and will continue to use them, but I think in this environment today, I think the ability to have a conversation is well received. So I had a couple opportunities for two panels. One was Steve Kempf, the commissioner at the Federal Acquisition Service, and Steve has been there for almost, I guess, 18 months or 2 years. And we asked him to reflect on his time there, but not really so much as a historical standpoint, but from looking down the road to the extent you can now in federal government with the budget situation the way it is. But I think Steve did a really good job and demonstrated a pretty in-depth knowledge of FAS and GSA. And the couple takeaways from Steve Kempf is, I think, regardless of what was going to happen with the super committee at that time, which now we know what they did, but was prior,
right.
Regardless of what they were going to do, he clearly sees the opportunity of fulfilling GSA, further fulfilling its mission of serving the government. And I think he feels that opportunity is going to come with more and greater responsibility, I think, with a smaller government. So I think he sees their programs as increasing.
Well, now, also, you are, as you said, you've started WNG LLC.
Right.
What's your vision there? What are you looking to do?
Well, I basically set that up so I'd have a parking spot.
Okay.
So it's
important to have a parking spot.
It is important, right? And so anyway, this is I just set that up to really have an opportunity to talk to other folks, which I'm in the midst of talking to some different companies. And personally, I would not mind getting back into running a company. So that's kind of, I know that's not what this is about, but this is not the interview for that. But that's, I love the industry. I'm not ready to retire. I when I get up in the morning, I don't consider it work. I enjoy interfacing, and I like it from the standpoint of working with other government contractors. And so that's probably where you'll see me land eventually.
Yes. Well, and I actually getting back to this sort of break I put break in quotes because you have been very active
right.
since you left Dell Tech. But, just looking back, you had a long, illustrious career in the federal government and then the opportunity to work on the other side, interfacing with the government on behalf of contractors and also assisting contractors and understanding the marketplace. What are the fundamental things that you got out of that in terms of, and maybe it's too amorphous a question, but, I think about, when you mentioned dialogue, the importance of dialogue, that's a fundamental truth to me with regard to having good contracts and good at contract execution. Are there things that you would point to that you learned, between your government and private sector careers?
Yeah, great question. I think the key here is there's clearly two parties, if you can look at it, in the relationship. And I think there's always I've seen been a quick reaction in some cases on both sides where I'll put my government at on 32 years in government. I think there's a need for the government And many folks in government will do this, but there's a, you know, sometimes perception becomes a reality, or it's believed reality, I guess is probably the best way to put it, Roger. And I think there's really a need to understand that, having been in government and understanding the sometimes the pressures on government when you get into the contracting arena, sometimes there's an idea that once it gets, that's for whatever reason, someone wants to get executed quickly, the requirements are not well defined, but get it out there where the government and will sort of control that process to point of award. And unfortunately, in some cases, the delivery is not what was expected, and it's pretty much that maybe the requirements weren't clear, as clearly defined, but there could have been an opportunity of talking to industry or putting something out there to get the industry's views on it and actually considering it, and I think being very open-minded about it. Hey, it's very clear the government wants to pay the least amount as possible, and and contractors want to make the maximum profit and margins. So once that's like, okay, everybody gets it now, so let's come and work together. And those things will happen through the process of a discussion, to your point. And I think that's what I learned the most is everybody in industry is not trying to break the law. Everybody in government, you know, from the standpoint of industry, is not trying to get to the low bid. Is trying to do a good job. And I think really listening and having dialogue is the key.
Okay. Well, on that note, Bill, we do have to take a break. But when we return, we'll be talking more with Bill Gormley, chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement and head of WNG. And we're going to do a round robin or a potpourri of government contracts issues. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Government year-end is fast approaching. Look to GSA Advantage and the Hahn Company now and anytime you're challenged with a compressed time frame or to do more but spend less. Now more than 400 of Hahn's newest and top models are available online and at great manufacturer direct prices. You'll find multi-purpose chairs, smart desk solutions, durable storage cabinets, contemporary conference tables, and more to fit any office need. All meet or exceed government sustainability requirements, too. To shop Hahn Direct, go to gsaadvantage.gov and type Hahn's contract number 27F, like furniture, 0015S, like Sam, in the search bar. That's 27F0015S. When you need office furniture, GSA Advantage is a quick, safe way to buy online, and Hahn lets you stretch your budget without compromising quality or style. Buy Hahn Direct. Go to gsaadvantage.gov and search contract 27F0015S today.
If you're a federal employee, it's time to choose your health insurance plan. So now's a good time to know about a different health plan that actually rewards you for living healthy. It's called Healthy Blue, and it's the next generation of health benefits from CareFirst Blue Choice. Healthy Blue rewards you with no-cost office visits, x-rays, lab tests, and preventative screenings, plus no referrals. And how's this for a reward? After switching to Healthy Blue, families can earn up to $700 towards their deductible and individuals $300. Healthy Blue is a new and positive approach to health care, and it's one more example of how committed CareFirst is to working with you and your doctor to help you on the road to good health. Visit HealthyBlueRewards.com to see how easy it is to earn up to $700 now and save even more through the years. Then take greater control of your costs and your health by choosing Healthy Blue from CareFirst. You, your doctor, and CareFirst. A healthy relationship.
From the CareFirst Blue Cross Blue Shield family of healthcare plans, an independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association, some no-cost benefits and rewards are only available through your Blue Choice PCP.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
No bail. That's the ruling by a federal judge who says Rezwan Firdaus was a danger to the community. The 26-year-old U.S. citizen has pleaded not guilty to charges he plotted to fly a remote-controlled explosives-laden plane into the Pentagon and the U.S. Capitol and planned to follow up with a ground assault. Firdaus was also accused of attempting to provide material support and resources to al-Qaeda. He was arrested after an undercover operation. I'm J.J. Green.
Sir, we have multiple contacts bearing 050 at 30 miles.
When the Navy and Coast Guard needed a radar to perform critical missions, they chose the TRS 3D radar from EADS North America. Built to cut through clutter in a busy coastal environment, the TRS 3D detects multiple surface and air threats simultaneously, so our nation's defenders can respond quickly and keep us safe.
Sir, estimated intercept time is 2 minutes.
EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
And now, the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Federal agencies have 4 months to develop diversity and inclusion plans under a broad, brief, government-wide strategy. Three goals: workforce diversity, workplace inclusion, and sustainability. The plan, with the guidance, emphasizes training and suggests agencies form diversity and inclusion councils. OPM is offering training to agencies for the next 4 months while they develop their specific plans. I'm Amy Morris.
Will you be receiving a 25% life insurance premium refund check from your insurance company? Federal employees with WEPA Life Insurance will be receiving over $6 million in premium refunds this fall. Since 1996, WEPA has refunded over $58 million in premiums. In comparison, Fegley has never issued a premium refund. Isn't it time you considered WEPA for your family's life insurance needs? For better insurance, better prices, and better value, visit WAEPA.org. Once again, that's WAEPA.org.
This holiday season, give the gift that money can't buy. When you donate blood with the American Red Cross, you give the perfect gift. Another hug, another laugh, another smile, another chance to someone in need of blood. And unlike the latest fashion trend, video game, or golf club, the perfect gift costs nothing but an hour of your time. Visit redcrossblood.org or call 1-800-RED-CROSS to schedule an appointment today. Give the gift of life and help unwrap a lifetime of memories for patients in need.
Federal News Radio is a proud partner of FEA, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund. In the past 25 years, FEA has helped more than 21,000 federal families with over $18 million in aid. By donating just $1 per pay period, you can help federal families keep the lights on, clean up after a natural disaster, or send a kid to college. Keep your CFC dollars in the federal family and make your pledge to FEA 11185 today. Learn more at FEA.org. That's FEEA.org.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're talking to Bill Gormley, Chairman of the Coalition of Government Procurement, and we're going to talk a little bit about various procurement issues. It's our potpourri sort of session of the show. And first, Bill, let's talk about your favorite program and one of my favorite programs, the GSA Schedules Program. Can you give your take on the current state of the program, where it is?
Yeah, sure. I think it's... It's a well-established, it's probably one of the most well-established programs in the government, and it has been, I guess one of your questions will be, hey, Bill, what do you think about the future of it? I think is clearly going to be around. It's been around since 1949, since GSA was started, and even before that. And I think the reason that schedules will be around is that it enables the government to acquire, commercial, we used to call them COTS, but commercial off-the-shelf, services and products, and it's one of the best ways of government obtaining those services and products that to run the government on a daily basis, Roger. And I think, yes, there's some nuances to the program. We can talk about what's competition, we can talk about pricing, and we can get into those specific issues as deep as you'd like to tonight today, but I think the bottom line is this is an acquisition vehicle with over 12,000 contract vehicles in place with 12,000 companies. And I think that it gives the government a very reliable, dependable source to go to at the time of need.
Well, it's when you talk about the schedules, you're talking about a $50 billion commercial item contracting program, and that's the combined GSA schedules and the VA schedules as well. And you talked about it continuing to be around and where is it going. Are there key, growth opportunities or issues that they could tackle at an operational level that would, from your perspective, enhance the value of the program for government and for industry as well?
Yeah, I think the schedules had one element of it for a long time was known as a new item introductory schedule. And all the schedules pretty much have that capability now, but I think it's gotten lost by virtue of being merged with the total program. And I'm not saying they need to change that, but I think that GSA has a great opportunity to acquire, you know, the latest technology or the latest of whatever someone's putting out there that the government has a need for, whether it's a service or a product. And I think that's kind of taken a back seat, that I think there's a huge market opportunity for that, both from a commercial standpoint and the ability for government to be on the cutting edge in some cases of some of these products. And I think part of the inhibitor of GSA getting these companies to come to the forefront, because you hear a lot of times, Roger, and the government's looking for industry to come forward with new ideas and in a macro sense. Now, it has nothing to do with the schedules program, but for security reasons and other things. But then when it gets down to, you know, where the rubber meets the road, and then people, you know, when the contracting officers are on, in some cases required that companies can have to be in business for 2 years. Well, 2 years, technology can change quite a bit.
Yes.
And so I think, you know, and that's where the business acumen of the government really, you know, the government, once again, I think needs to let its contracting officers kind of, you know, flex their opportunity to make decisions and not make it such a recipe process, which I think in some cases it has become.
Or bureaucratic process, let's say.
Yeah, bureaucrat can be anywhere. You and I have been on both sides here.
Yes. We've been bureaucrats, so to speak, in quotes.
In the private sector, in all cases, not as streamlined either.
That is true.
I've experienced that.
I have as well. When you talk about new technologies, we also talk, you know, there's green technologies. You know, this administration's focus on, you know, green, it seems to me, or cybersecurity technologies, because every company, you know, out there has got to protect their intellectual property or their customer lists, whatever, from those who are trying to access their systems. That's a commercial products, commercial services. And though, like you said, those do change all the time. And trying to find a more efficient and effective way to add those to the schedules, I think that could be a multiplier for the program. And delivering a more dynamic marketplace for industry, but also fundamentally for the government to access the latest technologies. And whether it's the issue of, you know, having to be in existence for 2 years, or I'm not going to put this on schedule until I get, you know, commercial pricing for it and say history. Well, you can always address that later, but what's a fair and reasonable price for this to get it on schedule now, and that the government be able to access, you know, the latest technology?
Yeah, I think to your point, a lot of the government's needs are the same needs as the private sector. I mean, there are unique, and there's no question, there are some unique requirements within the government when you get into security and, you know, DOD and so forth and some of the other agencies. However, the majority of the government's needs can be met through commercial solutions, and those, in many cases, those needs are the same needs, to your point, that the private sector has for its own companies or corporations. So therefore, you know, you're not going to find the commercial sector waiting 2 years before someone can qualify and come in and talk to them about a solution. Yeah,
right.
They're going to look for it, and that's part of the competitive advantage of industry, and that's, you know, that's the marketplace at its best.
Yeah. Are there areas, do you see opportunities where the schedules, you know, where there are operational changes or things that could be done to grow it, or actually, you know, not even grow it, let's say just provide greater value to the government?
I'm very much an advocate of simplicity.
Yes.
And so I think there's starting to be a buildup of inhibitors from making the schedules a streamlined process, more of a streamlined process than it is today. And I think the Hill and acquisition, you know, senior acquisition folks in government as well as the contracting officers, I think just need to just take a look and go through this process. I mean, the key here is that you know, you can really load up any program in government so it never takes off. And,
right.
And the schedules, fortunately, has been able to get off the ground quite a bit. But I'm starting to see a trend of oversight. And you and I both know there's a need for oversight, that this is not even any assertion that there's not. So to make that clear, there's a need for the IG. But at the end of the day, the only person who can sign a contract is a contracting officer.
Right.
And I think they should be, once again, recognized. And I think Dan Gordon, while I know when's he leaving? Next month?
Yeah, at the end of next month. Yep.
So he's done a great job of raising the responsibility of the contracting officer, the need for training there. And I hope that continues, and there's a clear need of, once again, giving the recognition to the contracting officer to make a good business decision. And hey, not all decisions are gonna meet everyone's test of dotting the I's and crossing the T's. However, I think at the end of the day, the government has to look and see, did it get a fair deal, and not overburden any program. And in regards to the schedules program, I think it can be a very streamlined process, and there's nothing to be concerned about when you get to speed and acquisition. Some people may think if you can award something pretty quickly that something's wrong with it. In fact, you know, I always go back to the NASCAR analogy. Those cars are pretty fast and they're high quality. And I actually think that's part of what the schedules are. And so I think to overload
there's
that.
There's competition in NASCAR,
and there
right?
is a lot of competition. It's pretty fast and quick, right? We can go down that road all day.
Well, yeah, and on that note, I think we will take another break. We will return. We'll be talking more with Bill Gormley, Chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And we're doing our potpourri round robin of procurement issues. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Government year-end is fast approaching. Look to GSA Advantage and the Han Company now and anytime you're challenged with a compressed time frame or to do more but spend less. Now more than 400 of Han's newest and top models are available online and at great manufacturer direct prices. You'll find multi-purpose chairs, smart desk solutions, durable storage cabinets, contemporary conference tables, and more to fit any office need. All meet or exceed government sustainability requirements, too. To shop Han Direct, go to gsaadvantage.gov and type Han's contract number 27F, like furniture, 0015S, like Sam, in the search bar. That's 27F0015S. When you need office furniture, GSA Advantage is a quick, safe way to buy online, and Han lets you stretch your budget without compromising quality or style. Buy Han Direct. Go to gsaadvantage.gov and search contract 27F0015S today.
To win and deliver government contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Meet Tech Systems. While often behind the scenes, Tech Systems has worked with government agencies and systems integrators for over 25 years. In fact, every year, they deploy over 70,000 IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems is active across a broad spectrum of government programs and has developed deep relationships to understand what works well and who does it best. Thinking about cybersecurity? Working on a cloud computing initiative. Tech Systems addresses critical program gaps related to people, projects, and work functions. Their delivery models scale from staff augmentation to IT project and outsourcing services to support transition, ramp-up, surge, and ongoing program support needs. Learn more at techsystems.com. TEKSystems.com.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
This is John Gilroy from Federal Tech Talk. You know, I've done over 200 interviews here on Federal News Radio, but many listeners still ask, yes, John, but what does your company do? Well, my company is called Armature. For the past decade, we have worked with organizations to help improve the way they collect data. You may call it comprehensive data collection, data analysis, or even outcomes measurements. If your agency has any problems with collecting, analyzing, or displaying data, then please visit our website at armaturecorp.com. We can help.
Want to save money on vitamins, herbal remedies, and other healthcare needs? Then visit Village Green Apothecary during our big year-end sale now through December 31st. You'll save 35% on our popular Pathway brand nutrition products, 25% off other supplements, and 20% off natural body care products. Visit us at 5415 West Cedar Lane in Bethesda or shop online at myvillagegreen.com. And be sure to catch our top-notch radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, every Sunday at 10 a.m.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Mega Food and Gero Form.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every Friday morning at 11. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to FedTalk at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week, host Bill Bransford will be joined by Walt Francis of Consumers Checkbook to talk about open season and top federal health plan issues.
We raise high for GW basketball. Some raise high with the jump out of your seat, buzzer beating, hands to the sky scream. Others give their all in the GW fight song, Raising High, the Buff and Blue. Raising High is more than just a movement. It's the movement for Colonials basketball, where senators and students, friends and families come together for the thrill of victory. Raise high with GW basketball today. Call 202-994-7325 or visit gwsports.com now.
A holiday drive to visit family or friends can be filled with unpleasant surprises, like bad traffic on usually fast-moving back roads and highways. Traffic patterns shift daily, often in maddeningly unpredictable ways. But Tim Lomax, a research engineer for the Texas Transportation Institute, says new technologies are beginning to help.
We understand a lot of that frustration at a lot better level than we used to.
In addition to using traffic sensors, Lomax checks data coming from traveling smartphones and navigation devices.
We don't really know individual people's traffic patterns, but they are, in essence, allowing us to see the speed on the roads that they're traveling on.
He says they reveal valuable details that can help with new ideas for moving traffic more smoothly. To find out more about this story, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we're talking with Bill Gormley, Chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement, and we're talking procurement, all things procurement. And Bill, when we broke last segment, we were talking about the GSA Schedules Program, and do you have any other thoughts on, you know, operational issues or contractual issues that you think could be addressed to improve, enhance the value of the program to the government customer?
Yeah, I think a couple. One is, well, I have more than a couple, I guess, but we have limited time today.
Right, we don't have all day for the show, right?
You see, I really love this stuff. Anyway, regards to the schedules, I'm just going to go off here a little bit. I think that the blanket purchase agreements should continue to be stressed as a clear ordering tool that maximizes competition and gets a real good deal, because you're getting the price at the time of the requirement. So I just want to get that little piece out there. The other one is ODCs, other direct costs, and GSA has been wringing its hands on this issue for a long time. And someone reminded me the other day, say, hey, Gormley, you didn't fix it when you were here. So I guess I don't know if that's a compliment or not, but anyway, I'm like, well, why haven't you fixed it yet?
And just to be clear, ODC is what we're talking about, really, actually, is commercial item contracting for services. There are FAR clauses that actually authorize the acquisition or inclusion in a task order of materials that acquired at cost and other direct costs, and also negotiating a sum certain for indirect costs. So, and it's part of, from sort of our perspective, the idea of being able to provide a total solution to an agency's commercial service requirement.
Yeah, I have I can't get into it too much, but I have one of our children's actually in government contracting, not a GSA, but they actually brought this up to me, and I don't even talk contracting to him that much anymore, but he brought up.
Well, now he's listened to you, Dad.
Yeah, he says, yeah, right. Yeah, no, that's right. Maybe I should talk about it. No, I'm just, yeah. Anyway, yeah, he actually brought up ODCs and the fact it was preventing them from using the schedules program or is making it very difficult for them. So I think at the line level, I think it's important to listen to the contracting officers. They're looking, to Roger's point, they're looking for the rest of the solution that may not be covered in the initial offering of what's the contractors providing the government through the schedules. And there may be other services that are necessary to perform a task. And so ODCs is a very common practice in the acquisition field. And I think that to your credit and the coalition's credit and its members, Roger, I think you're starting to get the attention with some folks within FAS through a dialogue and through working groups and through papers that you've published. So this would make it a phenomenal happy new year if we get the ODCs and the MAS. And I think what happens, if you don't mind to kind of jump off the ODC side, but to show a kind of a dotted line to what it also occurs, and in my opinion, it's really created an increase in duplication of contracts in government, because agencies will look to the schedules program and will not be able to acquire all of its needs. That, and a lot of that's going to be impacted by the ODC point that you so well laid out. So they're having to do another contract.
Right. Right. So, because they can't use the schedules, and that increases everybody's costs in the long run. You know, additional bid proposal costs, additional transactional costs for the government. Whereas if you're able to do task orders off existing schedule contracts, it's more efficient, mm-hmm. more cost effective approach, I think.
Yeah, I think overall, though, I think one of the key to Steve Kemp's point to what I mentioned earlier in a panel discussion we had, the value of GSA increasing. For the foreseeable future, based on budget cuts and some other things, is I think that you're going to see it's going to be a challenged time for some of these GWACs and so forth. I think for those programs that are are in place today, and they have appropriations associated with them, they could be impacted depending on how the budget funding is going to come down. But also for those that are funded, through industrial funding or some sort. And I think if that funding starts drying up, or if the appropriated side starts to decrease, there is a built-in cost these agencies have to incur to do contract management on their GWAC program. So I actually think that this is something that the administration and Congress will have the opportunity to finally look at what we've been talking about for a number of years, Roger, both when we were in government and outside of government. So hopefully we'll see this duplication of taxpayer costs. I'm not saying it's going to go away, nor am I saying it should go away 100%, but it clearly is.
It's out of balance.
Yes, right. It's fair.
Yeah. Thank you. Getting back to BPAs for a minute, and you mentioned those, but I need to ask you as a follow-up to that question is, because you do endorse the use of the BPAs, what's a good BPA from your perspective? What are the characteristics of a good BPA?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. One, you can have a BPA on products, you can have BPA on services, you can have BPA on solutions. So there's a three. Kind of hate to give you a three answer here, but on the product side, I think if you clearly are looking as an MRO to bring in products that are to replace others that are match part for part for clear reasons, the straight up BPA, single award BPA, is going to get the government a good deal. And you have to, what I mean by good deal, excuse me, it's just not the price, not the unit price you're paying. That, obviously, that's a pretty significant part of it, but it's the total cost of acquisition. And the ordering document that the BPA creates is a commercial practice. And believe me, industry is not going to spend more money than they need to either. And so this is a commercial, this is a commercial practice. Now, on the services side, it depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for a defined specification and requirement, then I would still be a proponent of a single BPA. If you're going out there like R&D, or if you're looking for other solutions or other requirements that may change during the course of the life of the BPA, then I think multiple holders is fine. But I think you can get to too many multiple holders, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if you go to three or something like that, that kind of gives you competition, fine. But, you know, I hear of some that are just taking it to an extreme, and it's almost, you know, almost redoing another contract for each BPA holder. And it's not, it's too cumbersome for government, and it's expensive, and it's cumbersome for industry as well. It's really expensive for both parties.
Well, along those lines, do you know, I guess you endorse the use of some sort of guaranteed minimum.
I fully endorse in order for the government to get a great deal is to have a guaranteed minimum, or at least have some type of sliding scale that when you as a customer get to a certain level, then that triggers a higher discount. There has to be something to trigger in for industry to be able to give you a better deal.
Do you see BPAs taking the place of task order competitions directly off the scheduled contracts, or are you concerned about that at all, or is there a right balance to it, or just depend on your requirement?
Yeah, I think it all boils down to the requirement. And I don't want to get too narrow in the discussion, because then sometimes it gets, that's what they need.
Yeah, right.
Keep your
options open.
I'm not
right?
avoiding your question, but the answer.
Sure you are. And now we can't avoid our last break. So right now we do have to take a break, but when we return, we'll be talking more with Bill Gormley, Chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement, and we're talking about all things procurement. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Here's Mike Krieger, U.S. Army Deputy CIO, on the Federal Executive Forum on Defense Cloud Computing, sponsored by HP.
My vision is, and we're seeing it with enterprise email, I can get on with a government or personal computer as long as I have two-factor authentication, and I can access my data and do my work. And we're seeing glimpses of that now. I was in Hawaii last week. From either my government laptop or anybody else's government laptop, I was able to just log on and get my email from the browser.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
No doubt, cloud's promise is appealing. Wary about the return on investments, risks, governance? Let the experience of HP guide you to cost-effective, secure solutions. Cloud solutions are a dynamic addition to traditional IT. Open up new ways to source, deliver, and govern highly scalable and flexible services. HP can help you navigate this new paradigm by blending their hardware, software, consulting, and managed services expertise. Make cloud a viable option for mission-critical needs. Shape your own cloud with HP. Visit hp.com/government/cloud.
So you blew it. You ate the donut. You slept in and skipped your workout. You had that second helping, went a little overboard at the buffet, hit the candy jar at the office a little too hard. You forgot to put safety first. You didn't eat your vegetables. You didn't even open that bottle of vitamins you bought. You accidentally left your gym bag at home. Your favorite machine was broken at the gym. Instead of your water bottle, you chugged a 2-liter of soda. You couldn't help yourself. You had a craving, or you simply couldn't resist. But you know what? It's okay. Two steps forward and one step back is still one step forward. One slip up isn't going to undo all that good work. So don't be afraid to embrace your setbacks and do whatever it takes to keep trying. At Kaiser Permanente, we believe the more you keep trying, the better chance you have to turn bad habits into good ones, because we think it's never too late to thrive. Visit kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Give the gift of Caps Hockey with a holiday gift pack. Caps holiday gift packs include two tickets to three exciting Caps games, an autographed puck, two Caps hats, and two passes for public skates at the Kepler Capitals Iceplex. There's no better way to celebrate.
Yeah.
you do, not somewhere you go. Learn about the future of telework in the federal government at fedstelework.com. Read more on telework resources and get connected with Feds Telework on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Tune in to Federal News Radio 1500 AM on December 1st at noon and listen to the Feds Telework panel discussion on issues directly affecting federal employees and the way they do business. That's December 1st at noon. Learn about the future of telework at fedstelework.com. That's fedstelework.com.
Giving you the edge on healthy living. Here's Mayo Clinic's Medical Edge. Joint pain and chest pain, fever and fatigue, rashes. With lupus, the symptoms can be as wide-ranging as the complications.
Lupus is often called the great imitator because it can affect virtually any system in the body.
Lupus, explains Mayo Clinic Dr. Vaidehi Chowdhury, is an autoimmune disease. That's where the body's immune system attacks its own tissues. The result is chronic inflammation, which can lead to the constellation of symptoms. African Americans, Hispanics, Native Americans, and Southeast Asians seem to have an increased risk of developing lupus, as do women.
For every 9 women, there is only 1 man that gets lupus.
While there is no cure for lupus, Dr. Chowdhury says that with the right care, the symptoms can be managed and the disease well controlled. For more information, talk with your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Tracy McRae.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
FederalNewsRadio.com, your one-stop shop for all things federal. Listen daily to interviews with federal managers and government contractors. Read Mike Causey's daily federal report, or just stop by for an update on the latest news affecting the federal community. FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're talking to Bill Gormley, Chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement, and we're talking about all things procurement, and particularly with focus on GSA and GSA Schedules Program. And, you know, Bill, you are known as the father of GSA Advantage.
Easy.
And I don't know if people condemn you for that or praise you for that these days, but you know, with that vision of establishing a government, you know, wide essentially catalog of commercial pricing for the GSA schedule contractors. And it's been around now, what, 15 years or so?
Yeah, we started out as look at this, man, this is like reminiscing here.
Yeah.
We started in 92, 93, so we're getting there.
Well, my question for you was just where is GSA going, and what do you see on the horizon for its e-systems?
I think part of it, not to digress, but just to digress for a moment, Roger, you know, we talked about contract duplication and so forth earlier, and I think what GSA has done and managed fairly well when you think of all the impediments that sometimes get put in front of various programs is they do have a good e-environment. And while we did do the SSQ, which is knowing how many dollars are reported in sales, we did the e-library, and we did e-buy, and we did GSA Advantage. So those systems have continued, to GSA's credit, have continued to improve. And I think GSA currently right now even has a notice out on the street that they'd like to get create some dialogue with industry on what would be the next kind of next gen? I mean, that's maybe a term everybody likes to use, but for GSA Advantage.
We're not above cliches on the show, okay?
And acronyms.
Right, exactly. We work in the government space. What do we expect?
And so anyway, GSA is looking down the road here and says, okay, this is the largest ordering system in government. And it continues to grow. So I think the more that they can streamline that, and they're applying that to their e-electronic ordering systems, kind of ties into what we're talking earlier. Just make everything a lot simpler. It all meets the requirements of the regulations. Let's not overburden, the contracting side, and we should not overburden the ordering side. And I think GSA is attempting to say how can we look at Advantage more simplistic and more orderly way, both from a contractor viewpoint and from a customer viewpoint.
Yeah, one of the things that sort of strikes me when you were talking that I thought about with regard to these systems, it's not only they have had to grow over time to accommodate. You go from 3,000 scheduled contractors to, like you said, 12,000. You go from eBuy, for example, from less than 10,000. Requests for quotes up there and those transactions using eBuy with the scheduled contractors to 75,000, 100,000, whatever. It's over 100,000 now. So they have had to develop systems that are scalable over time to GSA's credit. Down that lines, to the extent they're actually going to be talking to industry about where to go next, I think that's a very good thing. I know one of your favorite topics is strategic sourcing.
Why are you laughing?
You
can only do this on radio. You can only get to me on radio.
Right. Can we talk? I mean, I know you've mentioned it a couple times or alluded to the budget and, the role of GSA, and the commissioner of FAS, Steve Kemp, has talked about, the GSA's growing importance in the context of the future budget challenges. How do you see the budget sort of impacting government contractors? If you could give advice to the contractors out there about navigating what will probably be some very turbulent waters over the next few years?
Yeah, I think these are, we're all going to be like,
talk about cliches.
That's right. I think we're all going to be Christopher Columbus here for a while, see what we can discover. But I think we have been through, times that will, as we look back, will be similar. Couple of things here. One, we should keep in mind that I think the government does, for FY12, which we're into now, Roger, about a third of the budget is approved. And I think that's, so for those companies that have those that have relationships with those agencies and departments that have their budgets approved, then you pretty much will know how to maintain that relationship, what projects are going to move ahead, which ones won't. The rest of the government is going to be on a continuing resolution, I would think, for the foreseeable future, and probably through the end of the year, would not be unexpected. I think the strategy is, not to overplay this, but stay as close to your customer as you can, so you can kind of get the lay of the land as things start to develop during discussions and negotiation. But I really think you're going to see, government fiscal year 13 is where we all know is where this thing's going to hit a brick wall. And I think from a contractor standpoint, the more, and I'm going to talk pure from a schedule standpoint and beyond, I would strongly suggest that the more relationships that you can establish, and the deeper they are, that should be a focus. It should always be a focus, but should be the restart button and kind of get everybody energized, because I think that's really going to pay off in the long run for you. Because if there's, as the budgets get cut, you want to have footprints and
you're talking contractual relationships.
Contractual relationships.
BPAs, whatever, in place, so you have an existing infrastructure that agencies can look to quickly, as you know, with their budgets cut.
Exactly.
Right?
I mean, you're gonna just don't wait, and then you see what's gonna happen, and then say, okay, now we're gonna go in there and talk to them. I think you need to get in ahead of time and be ready to roll, because I think the budget year is gonna get so out of whack that they're not gonna have a lot of times to do formal contracts, and they're it's gonna get so queued up in the acquisition. The inbox is going to get so busy that they're not going to be able to get to the bottom of it.
Right, and with continuing resolutions, that, you know, the sort of start, you know, funding there, they'll be looking to obligate funds very quickly. Yes. So the more, you know, contract vehicles you've got or BPAs off the GSA schedules, the more opportunity you'll probably have.
Exactly.
Well, Bill, we've reached the end of the show.
What?
It went really quick. Hey,
Where's my turkey sandwich?
I've had enough turkey for a while myself. But I want to thank Bill Gormley, Chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement, for joining me today. I'm Roger Waldron, and this is Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition of Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.